Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, Lisa. How's it going?
Everything's going pretty well. I can't believe we're ready almost to March, which means even closer to the Boston Marathon. So, but I can't believe we're almost in March already. February always flies by really fast.
I haven't asked in a while. How's your Boston training going? I know it's a little bit abbreviated because you came out of, you know, a stellar race in Argentina and you needed to recover from that. But I assume now you're well into your training. We haven't talked about that in a while. We always talk about other stuff with each other and, of course, our runners. But I haven't heard about your training. How's it going?
It's very uneventful. And honestly, like, I need to get better about my training. I did a long run. I think I did 18 miles, but that was almost 2 weeks ago now. So, and this week, actually, I didn't even ask you, are you doing the RCA 10 miler this weekend?
I am not doing that race. I don't feel
I don't blame you.
That would be the best thing for me to do right now, but I can talk about that in a minute. Okay. So you're doing RCA.
So anyway, what I was going to say is that I'm doing the RCA 10 mile this weekend. So I'm not going to do a long run this weekend. So I've got to figure, I was just thinking this morning, like, I really need to get another like long run in. I've been very consistent with running. I've gotten in, you know, good mileage, no racing. I haven't done any racing. So this RCA this weekend will be my first race back, and listeners may remember from last year, is not my favorite race. I did not do well in it last year. It was kind of a painful race for me last year. And my first instinct this year was like, don't go back and do it. Why would I go back? But then I thought, you know what? I'm going to go, even if it's not my best race and it's not the best course and I don't love it that much. I'm going to go, I'm going to rip off the Band-Aid. I'm going to go and just see how it goes. And go in with the mindset that even if it's not the best race, I know it was not a great race for me last year. And then I had a terrific rest of my season last year and into the fall. So, I know I have a better perspective this year, so we'll see how it goes. It is, for those who are listening, who don't know, aren't local, it is our, the Roadrunners Club of America, our local, Maryland RCA 10 miler club championship. So it's not a race for individual placements. It's actually a race for club placements, which I think is that's the part I like about it, is that you're racing as running is always such an individual sport. And this race is a team competition, and it's actually scored like cross country races where there are placers and displacers and points. And it's really an interesting scoring system. And so I kind of like that aspect of it, that I'm there to race for the team, not necessarily individually for myself. So I feel like even just showing up and getting some points, hopefully for the team, will help. So I appreciate that. So like I was saying, I was thinking I should be doing a long run this week or this weekend. And then I thought, well, I don't want to do it around the RCA 10 miler. So sometime, hopefully the following week or the following weekend, I'll get back to some long runs. So like I said, it's been very uneventful. I've just been chugging away, getting an easy mileage, no racing, no nothing fancy. So this will be the first chance to kind of get a sense of where my fitness may or may not be. But again, not going to rely on too much other than for a fun opportunity to get out and do some racing. And luckily, I think the weather looks okay. This race traditionally for me has been really, really bad weather, like freezing cold rain. And the course is downhill the first half and uphill the second half. So it's a tough race. It is not for the faint of heart. So we'll see how that goes. So other than that, like I said, just plugging along and realizing, I realized this morning that it is almost March and I haven't done really a ton of long runs. So I'll commit to that in March. So that's how it's going.
I love how you say you're getting a test of your fitness. I feel like you just raced in Argentina. You had a stellar race. So I think I know your fitness is there. It's weird though, when you take a little bit of an extended break from racing after having a lot of races for you this fall. I'm sure it does feel like you haven't raced in a while, but from my perspective, it hasn't been that long. And I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised on Sunday. And I really love that reminder though, to our listeners, that a tough tune-up race or a tough training cycle does not at all mean that your actual race is not going to be the result you hope. It often can be the opposite. And we certainly shared that with one of our runners over the weekend who had a tough training cycle. And she ended up having at a half marathon in Palm Springs, California, she surprised herself completely and ended up having a surprise PR. Why is that? Because even though this runner had a series of illnesses, so many of our runners have been struggling with various infections and flu and COVID and all the things this winter, she was able to return to running, doing consistent mileage. And in spite of not being able to get in all of her week workouts and not feeling necessarily at her best, she still was building that aerobic engine. And as a result, she surprised herself and had a terrific race. So your story, of course, is not even similar to that, but I think it's just a great point that last year when you raced RRCA, you were not thrilled with that. And then look at what you did at Boston last year. You had a phenomenal Boston. So thank you for that reminder. I think that's something everyone needs to hear this time of year when things just don't seem to always go according to plan, whether it's weather, illness, and all anything else like
that. Yeah, the weather never is. I'm not a great cold weather racer, you know that. And especially in the rain or cold. Last year it was not rainy, but it's always cold at the RRCA 10 miler. So I'm just feel a little rusty. But I wouldn't blame you for not doing it because it's a hard race. I think a very hard course, a hilly course, probably not the smartest course to race when you're still being very careful about your comeback and your recovery. So how is your training going?
Knock on wood, I feel like I've pieced together some consistent weeks of solid running, and I'm really, really excited about that. So I have been running anywhere between high 20s to mid 30s. So what I've been doing is each week I bump up a little bit, and then the next week I bump back down. So it looks kind of like a staircase, up, down, up, down. And so 2 weeks ago, I got up to 37 miles total with a long run of about 12 miles. And then this past week, as a result of that, I went down to 32 miles. And then this week, I'm going to try to get up to about 38 or 39 miles total. So
that's great.
I'm really excited about it, not only because, you know, I'm really careful about my mileage increases, but also when I'm running, I don't feel terrible. I say it like that because I don't expect to feel exactly the same as I did before I tore my ACL. So my standard is low. Do I feel terrible? No, I don't. And I did a 5K a couple weeks ago in Ruston, and I'm trying to do a 5K a month just to kind of get an idea of where I am in terms of pushing myself. And it was the best 5K I've had since I got injured. And so I'm really feeling encouraged, and I'm just so hopeful that I can continue this trajectory of gradually increasing my mileage. And then my plan is once I'm able to piece together consistent weeks of anywhere between 40, low 40s to mid 40s, where that's not a big deal, whenever that is, that's when I'll start thinking about, am I ready to run a marathon? And I didn't do that last time over the summer. I had a marathon in mind and I was building my mileage and I felt okay doing it. But now I don't have a deadline and I don't want to have a deadline right now. I really want to make sure my body is absorbing this mileage and that I'm not forcing it at all. And I generally don't have this luxury. None of us do. We usually sign up for races and have a deadline. And I am purposely not doing that and hopeful that this approach will allow me to completely recover, get back into running with the knowledge that I don't have to push any mileage or pace right now and just kind of let the running come to me. And I'm still doing strength training, heavy strength training, 2 to 3 times a week. And I hope that will continue to serve me well. And yeah, that's where I am. And I'm just really thrilled about it. And not everyone, every run feels great. My motto is it doesn't feel terrible.
That's good. And not everyone feels great for most of us. So I think that's just a normal cycle. And I like that this time you're letting your body be the driver of the decision and not the deadline be the driver of the decision. I think that's a really important part, that you are, you know, going through the process and then you'll set the goal versus setting a goal and then kind of forcing the process into that goal. So I think that's great. And I think you're on a great trajectory. So you've been extremely patient. I know it's been hard. So I'm excited to see, you know, where things go. So, but today we're going to talk a little bit about, first of all, we're getting excited about Boston. And even though you're not running Boston this year, you are running the 5K, which I'm very excited about. And you are going to be there. We're going to both be there. And our plans are well underway for our panel that is on, Sunday at the expo at 2 p.m. So we're very excited for that. And in anticipation, building towards Boston and starting to think about the logistics of Boston and the Boston weekend, we are fortunate enough to have over the next few weeks of our podcast episodes, members of the BAA staff on our podcast episodes. So we are fortunate enough to have on our podcast today, Lauren Prochan. She is the Chief of Race Operations and Production, or as she affectionately calls it, CROP, for the BAA. So she actually is involved with all of the BAA's races and initiatives, but we talked to her today, particularly about the Boston Marathon. And she is, as we like to call her, and as I think of her as the Oz behind the curtain, because she is the one who actually physically sits in a room on race day and oversees everything from the water cups in water stations to security to the finish line to the buses, you know, getting runners to the start line. She oversees all of exactly what it says, race operations and production. And Lauren has an extensive history in events management, which really, I think, fed well into this job. And, you know, this is a very, very large event. And she is awesome. She's also a runner. She's run the Boston Marathon twice. So she has experience being on the course as a runner. And we get to talk to her about kind of insider tips on having a great experience at the Boston Marathon, a smooth experience. There are a lot of logistics, there are a lot of moving parts. I think that's overwhelming to a lot of people, especially first timers who hear about having to take buses from Boston to Hopkinton. And how do you get on the buses? Where do you stay? How does, you know, what are the logistics of the weekend look like? They're pretty, they can be overwhelming, but they are so well run. And we know that from being there for many, many years that the BAA runs like a perfectly run tight ship, really well-run production. So everything is very, very, very well organized. The key, and we talk about this with Lauren, is having the information, being informed before you go to Boston. So what listeners that are running Boston for the first time, or maybe for the second or third time and just need a refresher, can start to do already is download the BAA app, go on the BAA website, make sure you're getting the BAA emails and reading through them. Read those emails. They send them out regularly. They're really good about communications. But if you've got all that information, you can better plan for your weekend. You can make sure you have a smooth weekend, no surprises, no freakouts at the last minute. So we talked to Lauren today about kind of what it looks like running the Boston Marathon from the inside, the challenges they face, the changes they make, and tips that she has on having a smooth race day.
I also loved about this conversation, not only did she provide a lot of insider tips, even for veterans, she also mentioned some changes for this year that are very exciting. And at the very beginning, we talked with Lauren about how she got into the field, and she provided some great advice for folks who are interested in going into the field of sports event operations and management or marketing, and anyone with kids who are interested in possibly going into that field. She had some terrific advice, and it was very interesting to hear about her career and how she ended up being in this position, affectionately known as CROP. So
yeah, I say it would be my dream job, but I don't know if it really would, because then I wouldn't be able to run the race. I'd be like Dave McGilvery and be like, wait a minute, how am I going to run the race if I have to be involved? But she has a pretty cool job. I think it's a pretty neat job.
I think either her job or Dave's job would be equally as cool for different reasons. I loved when she provided details in our conversation about what race day looks like for her. It's definitely different than what race day looks like for Dave. So it was fun to kind of compare what their race experiences are like, Dave as the race director and Lauren as director of operations, and kind of what that is. But they are both, I mean, she is so hardworking and really such an impressive person. And it was so much fun to talk with her for the first time and learn a little bit more about the nuts and bolts of this tremendous operation, otherwise known as the Boston Marathon, and all of the work that goes into it. And once again, if we haven't said it already, just we have such respect for race directors in general and people who host these events and put on these events. They, you know, we show up, we run, we don't think about it once we're out there running, but just the idea of the massive amounts of coordination that go into something like the Boston Marathon, it's unfathomable. And to hear her talk about it and really put it into, shed some light on the ins and outs was really exciting for us to hear.
Yeah, and I think what she mentions, and when we've talked to other members of the BAA staff, including Dave, always mentioned, is it's a team. And they have such an amazing team of really dedicated workers, dedicated staff, dedicated volunteers. So it's really neat to see how everyone has this shared mission of making sure that we all have an amazing experience. So without further ado, let's turn it over to Lauren, and hopefully some our listeners will get some good tips on preparing for a great weekend and a race day Monday in Boston in we're under 60 days now. I don't know exactly how many weeks, but we're under 60 days and close to March, which is close to April. So we're getting there.
All right. Well, have a great week, Lisa.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
And welcome to the Run Farther and Faster podcast. Lauren is the Chief of Race Operations and Production. So you are kind of in charge of the entire event, and you are kind of the Oz behind the curtain. So we are really excited to have you on today and talk about this year's Boston Marathon. Give us some tips to pass along to our listeners, to ourselves as well. We'll be back in Boston this year and are excited to be part of this year's race, and really always excited to be back in Boston. So thanks so much for joining us. And why don't we just kick off with, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, where you live, what you do, and you know, how you got into doing this?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. That was a lot of questions right off the jump. So I have been in large scale special events for longer than I'm going to admit on air. So let's just call it 20 plus years. I love the events industry. I have had a focus on mass participatory events. So runs, walks, rides, what have you. So my expertise is really outside, moving people from one place to another. I live in Boston. I'm actually at the 1.61 mile mark on the Boston Marathon course. I walk that distance from my house to our offices every single day. So I love the event so much that I actually bought a house on the course. So thanks for having me, and excited to talk to you guys today.
Yeah. So tell us, we were talking a little bit offline, before we started recording, you run Boston before. You ran it back in 2011 and 2012, and that was before you were involved with the organization. When did you get involved with, when did you come on board at the BAA, and did you come in your current position, or how did you come on board?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've actually had a long history with the Boston Marathon. I've been with the organization full-time for 5 going on 6 years. But prior to that, I did work for an agency that facilitated with the sponsorship management and activation. So I've been participated at the Boston Marathon since I graduated from college. So we'll just call that 20 plus years at this point. I have been full-time at BAA, as mentioned, for 5 years. I came in as the director of operations and grew into the position that is affectionately known as the CROP, so Chief of Race Operations and Production. And what that means is, you called me Oz. It feels like Oz. I have a fantastic amount of people who work with me. It is not a one-person job. Operations is hand in glove with sponsorship and marketing, our subcontractors, our volunteers, our PR department. So yes, we all have a lot of responsibility, but I usually summarize it from permits to porta potties and everything in between. But definitely work very closely with our public safety partners. We do a lot of our emergency preparedness work, and we also move traffic cones. So the resume is vast, and our scope of work is very diverse.
So for anyone listening who's in the industry or related industries, there are probably a lot of people saying, wow, that this would be my dream job. So what advice do you have for individuals who would like to do your job or something similar to it? What experiences would you recommend that they do? And what types of classes, if they're in school now, should they take? What do you think they should do?
My first reaction would be to volunteer. That is the best way to understand what it means to actually work at an event instead of participating at an event. Of course, I now run other people's events, and I always keep like a mental checklist of what they did amazing or what I would like to take away from it. But volunteering, I think, is invaluable, right? It's hands-on experience. You start to work with both the organizer themselves, but other like-minded people, and understand that there is a difference from handing out water than to receiving water. There's best practices with absolutely everything that we do. So that would be my first recommendation. In terms of classes, I came into this industry before really there was a sports marketing or sports division of any kind. So I really looked to hospitality and internships. So that's almost a step above volunteering, right? Is find an organization, find an industry that you're really interested in and intern. It used to be unpaid in my day. I'm really starting to date myself, but right now there's amazing organizations out there that'll do paid or unpaid opportunities. And again, that's just another layer of getting in it and doing it. I do think that there's a lot to be learned from college level courses, but experience is paramount. Reading about an emergency egress plan on paper and then seeing how it comes together in person and why it's on paper the way it is are two very different things. So if you're trying to get into this industry, find your local 5K or your 10K, figure out how you can be helpful and just kind of keep plugging away. I'm in this position today because events people are kind of crazy, right? There's no nights, there's no weekends. You put your nose to the grindstone and you just go. I would think that there's probably, someone who would say that there's a very strategic way to get from point A to point B, but it's being around the work, being around the people, and just continuing to further your own personal education. And it comes, it really will, because I started as a events coordinator at a firm, 20 plus years ago, and really just work your way up. But it's that life experience that really adds to your resume. And you learn as you go. And I think from an operations standpoint, the most important part is you never make the same mistake twice. Mistakes are okay. You just don't do it twice.
Speaking of mistakes, are there any lessons? We're going to get to the 2024 race, but are there any lessons that you've learned along the way that have been, important lessons to you and how, and changes that you've implemented? And I know we talked a little bit before about you running other races and making mental notes, but either at Boston or other, what have you learned along your journey in this position?
Yeah, everything, right? So the information comes from everywhere. So it's not only going to other 5Ks, 10Ks, half marathons, but we have a family tradition where we go to the Christmas markets overseas every year. And I see how they've implemented roadblocking vehicles. And if you're in that big group of people, how is everyone getting out of here safely? What is the public safety? I'm fun to travel with, I promise. But these are the types of things as an operations person, when you're in charge of 30,000 athletes and 10,000 volunteer safety, those are the types of things you learn and you take away from other events. How are people being communicated to if there's a delay or a course evacuation? What kind of tools are in the area? And do they have good parking signage? What was their direction to get to the parking lot? How many times was I communicated to the event? So it really comes from everywhere. And I know you asked learnings from 23, but every single event that we do, and this is our subcontractors, our volunteers, and those runner surveys. I know people think they probably go into a black hole. We read every single one of those surveys. We look at what people liked, felt neutral about, really disliked, and that's our roadmap for the following year. So some of it does come from our public safety partner may ask for an additional blocking vehicle. But if we heard from multiple people that the baggage process was confusing, that we've got to drill down as to how we make that not confusing. Was there a breakdown in communication? Was there signage not great? Were our volunteers not trained properly? And that all comes back to us. So our plans are evolving not only year over a year, but from event to event. So what did we learn from our 10K to bring into our half marathon? What did we hear from our 5K the 2 days before the marathon that we may need to adjust somehow for the marathon? So it's a constant learning process that never ends. And where we do work on this every single day of the year, it's not lost on us, that feedback and that feedback loop, if you will. What did we hear? How do we adjust it? How do we implement? What was the following year's feedback? And did we do a good job of adjusting?
Well, as runners who've run the race many, many times, I think I can say, and my first race was in 2001. So I've seen a very long continuum of changes. And I will tell you that absolutely, I feel like every time I fill out a runner survey, the next year it's fixed, or, anything I might've critiqued or given constructive, wow, that is, I think the BAA has always been known as sort of the top notch of really got your stuff in order and really make the runner experience amazing. So you guys are doing a really good job of that. What do you find is your most challenge, the most challenging part of your position?
I would say one of the most challenging parts is introducing something new. So there is a very fine line that we need to walk between legacy and staying current. We are the oldest marathon in the world. There is a legacy that we should not mess with, for lack of a better word. People are expecting certain things, certain experiences and feelings from participating at the Boston Marathon. So when we look to introduce something new, what is it going to achieve? How are people going to react and feel when they experience something new? And is it part of our brand and message? So I've seen a lot of cool things from the Berlin start line to the rock and roll on-course entertainment, but is that right for us? So it's a very careful conversation that we have annually of what is this new Jumbotron going to display? How does it weave into the fabric of who we are and the experience that people are expecting? And interestingly enough, just over 50% of our athletes are brand new every single year. So that turnover is it's high. And that goes to the makeup of our race, but they have heard from their, the people who have run before them, what they experienced. And there's nothing more powerful than that, hearing from your friend, from your neighbor. That's the best advertising we can commit to. We know that people don't read everything, right? So you're going to listen to your friends, you're going to listen to your family, you're going to expect the Wellesley Scream Tunnel. So we would never touch the Wellesley Scream Tunnel, right? So I think that is really, I would say, one of the most challenging things is balancing new technology and innovative ideas with who we are as the oldest marathon in the world.
And I would imagine there's a lot of strong opinions, and you, as in your position, you have to receive those and figure out how to navigate. So for example, one of course was this year, the 529 buffer. And I'm guessing that you received a lot of strong opinions about that. And it's difficult because, as you mentioned, there is a legacy to the race, and a lot of the allure of this race is the fact that you have to qualify to get in. So there's a balance between making sure it's inclusive, but also creating that space for those who want to achieve a BQ. So can you talk a little bit about how you manage that every year and manage the feedback and also the disappointment and the pride that comes with the rules of qualifying for the Boston Marathon?
Well, thankfully, we have a very lovely, enduring athlete services team that sits and answers every single one of those emails. I think, unfortunately, from my point of view only, Lauren Prochan, is that we need to expect that we're going to be wrong no matter what we do to a fair amount of people. We do stick to our, I would say, rules and guidelines. I think, again, going back to what makes Boston special or different, it is adhering to some of those traditions that is inherently exclusive by nature. So what we do then is figure out how we can be perhaps inclusive in other ways, whether that's at the Boston Marathon, whether it's our programming, if it's at different events, how we can welcome people as spectators or volunteers, or how we can have that inclusivity in other areas. That's not going to please everyone either, right? But if we were to go the opposite direction and we were start to loosen some of those guidelines and rules around qualifier, that's also going to really mess with some people's perspectives of the Boston Marathon. So again, going back to, we're never going to be the right fit for everyone. We're going to be wrong for most of the people who are watching what we're doing. And I'll also say that change is really difficult. It's not as if we can just snap our fingers and say, you know what, let's do two marathons back to back. And day one is going to be 30,000 charity participants, or open it up to as many people as possible. And then the following day is all qualified. I would love it, right? But we have neighbors, we've got public safety, we have volunteers, we have resources. So we are also trying to be good neighbors to everyone else. So again, it's a really slippery slope. And unfortunately, we're never going to be right for everyone. So we're just trying to be, I would say, as transparent as possible with the decisions that are made. So at least we hope people understand our point of view. And I think that's all we can really do, right? Is explain the how and the why, and know that it's not going to be right for everyone.
Yeah, I think both Julie and I would agree that the BA does an amazing job of that, of being transparent, really trying to balance all of those competing demands and competing interests. And I think you've done a great job. What do you think is driving this? You know, when I did this race in 2001, you could register till like a week before the race. You could get a hotel until like the day before for like $100 a night. I mean, it's obviously inflation, but you know, it was a totally different. What do you think is driving? You think it's, you know, there are so many more qualifiers. There are so many more. The times have even been tightened over the years. There are so many more qualifiers. What do you think is driving that?
Anecdotal only. I think that with COVID, our sport actually strengthened, right? You could go out and you could go for a run or a walk or a jog or whatever it was by yourself, and you did not need to go into a gym. So I think it opened a lot of doors to brand new participants that have never thought about running a 5K, let alone a marathon. I do also think that experienced travel has boomed over the last 10 or so years. People aren't going to sit on a, well, they are, right? I go and sit on a beach. Sometimes you need that after the marathon. You just go and relax. But now people are going to destinations to do a thing, right? And that's how a lot of events market themselves to new athletes, is come to New Orleans, go to Mardi Gras and do a 5K, or come down to Florida and do a turkey trot, you know, and visit your in-laws. I think that experience travel has really changed how our athletes look at events, that it's become part of an itinerary or even the destination, you know, why you choose Grandmother's Marathon. You know, it's to go to participate and then add some travel onto it. So I really just think the idea of our sport in general, especially these longer distances, have really changed. Also the experience of being on the course. Look at the Disney events. That is a marathon, but also it's marathon dinner and a show. Like, you get a full immersive experience. And it's just much more than running. I think if you looked 10, 15, 20 years ago, you started, you finished, you got a medal, and you got some water and hydration on the course. Now athletes are really expecting or looking for, what's that crowd feel like? Do I see the Sitco sign? What is this Wellesley Scream Tunnel everyone's spoken so highly of? So it really, I think, puts a lot of pressure on events to have that course interaction or activity or sponsorship displays. And it's really changed how our sport's actually produced versus, you know, start, finish, water, medal, you're done, to a full day of the activity and then a full week of travel in some instances. So I think our industry has just changed as a result of it.
That's such an interesting answer. I expected you to say something about social media, but I love the way you frame that, because of course social media, you know, bolsters all this, but that is so interesting. And you're absolutely right. Running races is more than just the race, it's experience. And certainly Boston has benefited from that and also done a great job in creating more of an experience. And I know for Lisa and me, we really saw that boom Interestingly, in 2021, when the BAA had to be a lot more innovative that year and take things outside, and we loved it. We loved the whole vibe that year. And we were so happy to see that many of those things that were implemented in 2021 for COVID reasons actually remained. And we hope it continues. We really love those aspects. So,
awesome.
So before we talk a little bit more about this year, you mentioned how you always aim to make Boston more inclusive in other ways. Can you take a moment just to talk about what happened last year around Heartbreak Hill and what the BAA is doing this year to provide more communication between first responders and the BAA and spectators?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the biggest learning that we had from 2023 is that we needed to do a better job of communicating what our spectator guidelines were. These aren't new rules. We have always asked that spectators, volunteers stay off the course. Boston is extremely narrow. We are about 17 feet wide in our most narrow point, and we've got 30,000 athletes of all types of abilities, and I would say all types of considerations, para athletes, blind athletes, deaf runners, that we need to just ensure that they're kept safe from the time they leave Hopkinton to the time they get into Boston. And the best way that we can do that is to make sure that the course stays clear. So again, this rule isn't new of keeping spectators off the course, but what we've learned is that we just need to do a better job of communicating that. So we have done a lot in terms of making sure we'll have a whole campaign that'll go out closer to the event itself to really just establish what that means, what it means to be a good spectator and to stay on the sides of the road for all of our athletes to enjoy the day and all of our spectators to enjoy the day as well. That's the most important part. We want to be, again, going back to Lisa, your point about transparency, we just want to make sure everyone knows what's expected that day. We'll also be implementing, as I mentioned, that campaign, but even it is in our racing app. When you go to click in, I'm a spectator, our rules and guidelines will be right there for everyone to see, that really just to provide everyone having the great experience, and that's everybody, that our expectation, our hope, our ask is for everyone to remain on the sides of the road.
Yeah, again, I think this goes back to what we were saying before, is that you guys may get feedback and see things happen, and you just, you know, you're transparent and make those changes. And the next year it all, you know, it's like, wow, listen, you know, look, changes actually took place. So that's always nice to see. So we as runners really, really appreciate that and absolutely appreciate how narrow the course is and how important it is to be safe, especially after 2013. There are always concerns of safety on the course, maybe not to the extent something happened in 2013, but you're always worried about safety along the course. And I can't imagine, I always think about any race, it's not like a football stadium where everyone's contained and you have a contained space to keep secure. You've got 26.2 miles plus all of this space on the side of the course to keep secure. And that seems like, to me, a very hard, very challenging job. And you guys have always done a great job with that and of balancing the runner experience with that safety. You know, after 2013, I kept thinking, like, what's it going to be like to go back and what's the experience going to be like? And it felt safe, but not overly, overly controlled. So I think you guys have done a really good job with that. So so kudos to you and your team. What are you most excited about for this year? What other, you know, what is there anything you can let us in on? Anything, any changes, anything that's, you know, anything that you're going to see in 2024? What are you most excited about for this coming year?
Yeah. Well, I can promise you that the course will stay the same always. So that I can promise. We're actually all very excited to bring on our new sponsor, Bank of America. It has really been just a really amazing experience to have a sponsor like Bank of America come in and really just bring new ideas to the table. There'll be some cheer zones out there for Bank of America activations. You'll see one perhaps halfway through the course and then a little bit closer to the end of the course. Katie, I know, is coming on as well. So we have a brand new location for our Fan Fest this year, and it allows us a lot more space. So we're going to be at City Hall Plaza, and our sponsors are very excited about it. So I'm not going to steal too much of Katie's thunder, but it really allows us to create a festival, an outside festival, in addition to our expo. I know we're really excited. That just allows our sponsors to activate in a different way for people to gather. Our beer garden will be bigger this year. Our stage and entertainment, which again, Katie will talk about, it really will just allow for an additional gathering place that was larger than Copley Square for people to come together. So we're really excited about FanFest. We're really excited about Bank of America. And Katie's really the one to talk about activations and fun stuff. I can tell you how we're keeping everyone safe and again, where those porta potties will be. But we're actually just excited to welcome our 30,000 athletes once again, and just to give them the best experience possible. And, you know, fingers crossed, maybe it'll be nice out too and not raining, which would be really, really good. But I can't plan for that.
We can hope, and we will talk to Katie about that. But so what does your race day look like? I mean, we know we've talked to Dave Gilbert before about like basically gets no sleep and what he does, and then he runs the race at the end of the day, which to us is just
I promise I don't do that.
But what does race day look like for you?
So race day for me starts at around 3 a.m. We are in what we call affectionately the Rock, but it's the Race Operations Center. And we are surrounded by TV screens and camera feeds and our own computers and lots of dashboards and graphs and graphics. So we're in there starting at 3 with our transportation program. We're getting our blocking vehicles in place. We're getting our participant buses in place, our baggage buses in place, our roads start to shut down. So I am in that Rock from 3 a.m. to 6-7 p.m. There is a restroom, I promise, and it's inside, which is always a plus for us.
There is food.
But I'm surrounded by our agency partners in Boston, federal, state coordinators. Our transportation program is in there. Our medical program, our amateur radios are in there, and we are triaging pretty much the whole day. It can be everything from our vault didn't have cups. We need more tables. Our ice didn't get dropped off. Our medical tent generator needs to be replaced. Our bus didn't show up. Our bus needs to get rerouted. So we are really working from the time we get there to that last athlete crossing the finish line and every bus going back to where they, and there's post-event parties too, right, that require transportation. So I'm saying that it ends around 6:30, but that's the race. There's still more work to be done. And we're just watching. We watch almost every inch of that course. We have communication pathways with every single one of our cities and towns, public safety partners, DPWs, emergency services, our hospitals. We are tracking every runner. We're looking at course runner density as it travels down the course. It's really cool to see those waves and how the runners kind of spread out and come back together. We're tracking in a very safe way. We're tracking all of you to make sure that we know if you stop moving, we know why, and how to get you. If you do ever drop out, how we get you back to either Boston or where you need to be. So there's a lot that happens on event day, but I stand the whole day, too anxious to sit, but I'm looking at screen upon screen upon screen. But that it's exciting. It's great. More often than not, it's a quiet day is the best day that we can ask for. Honestly, if we're triaging tables and ice, that's a really good day in our book. But we are prepared. I know we were talking earlier before we hopped on, we're prepared for the really hot. We're prepared for the really cold. We're prepared for lightning. We're prepared for everything. We just hope we don't actually have to exercise it.
I picture you all like air traffic controllers where you're like in this booth and you're just all manning all this different equipment to make sure that everything is coordinated. That's incredible. I was just thinking as you were sharing this that they need to make a documentary about the behind the scenes of the Boston Marathon, because it really is fascinating. It is such a huge operation and it's just really interesting. So from the perspective of a first-time runner, actually even a veteran runner, there's a lot of anxiety about the logistics of the Boston Marathon. And I hope in listening to you that people find comfort in knowing how organized you all are. But if you were to give some advice to the runners who are thinking about, well, I know that I'm supposed to board the bus at this time, but I'm going to get to the Boston Common as early as possible, because I want to get on the very first bus, because it is my understanding that if I don't get on the first bus, I will have no time in Hopkinton. Can you speak to those runners about why things are written in the race information the way it is, and what runners can do to optimize their race morning?
Absolutely. If I could give any advice, it is, and I know we send out a lot of communication, but is to read the communication. And why I mentioned that, Julie, you alluded to it, is that your bus time, your wave time is very much designed and catered to you. You do not need or want, quite frankly, to sit in Athletes Village longer than you need to. There's nothing up there. You're not going to miss anything. I promise you that there will be porta potties, there will be coverage, there'll be snacks and hydration, but it's not fun to sit up there, especially if the weather's inclement. So what we've done, and why we've given you the departure times and the wave that we have, is truly based off of your race day experience, how fast you run, what wave you're in, and we back into that, right? So if you're told to get on bus number, or sorry, the second wave buses, it's by design. It's so you don't have to sit in a location for longer than you need to. If anything, we're trying to optimize making sure that you're there for as short amount of time as possible to make sure that your event day is as comfortable as possible. Spend that extra 20 minutes at your hotel, especially if it's hot or if it's cold or if it's raining. I promise, staying dry for extra 20 minutes is far greater experience than sitting up in Athletes Village for an additional hour for no reason. I would also say, listen to your volunteers. If you have questions, they're very educated. They go through trainings. They have all the same information you've received. And if they don't know the answer, they know how to get it. So if you're feeling uncertain as you go into the expo, or even at baggage drop or walking to the buses, ask a volunteer. They have all the answers. And if they don't, they'll find it for you. That would be my greatest point of information for everyone, is really just to read that information. I would also push here that if you missed an email or two, download the racing app. All the information's in the racing app as well. Everything from course maps to hydration points on the course, expo hours, your wave information, all the bus departure information, really anything that you could need. Selfie frames, just in case you're feeling so inclined. Everything is in that racing app. And if there isn't, if the answer you're looking for is not in there, there's also a way to get in touch with us as well. Also, make sure you've got your push notifications turned on, because we'll be sending out that messaging throughout the weekend as well. Expo hours or fan fest bands or bus departure loading times. So all that good information will get pushed directly to you as well.
That's cool. What about advice for spectators similarly? Spectators have an app, but they don't have packets of information like the runners. And a lot of spectators feel very overwhelmed by the logistics of Boston. So what advice do you have for them?
Yeah. So we've been doing a really good job of adding all pertinent and actually probably plus information to the spectator portal as well. So most importantly, how to get around Boston is in there. So not only for event day, but during event day, we have the luxury of being on a few Boston T, our train. It actually gives you some recommendations as to if you're trying to get out to certain points on the course, what T line to take, what stop to get off of, and what time you will see kind of the pros come through, the wheelchairs come through, wave one come through. So all of that information is in there. So if you're trying to get to the Woodlands Hills T stop, that's by our Morton Hydration Station, it tells you when, what line to get on, so orange, red, or green, what stop to get off, and how to walk to a good spectating location as well. So we've really, I would say, hopefully, done a really good job the last 4 or 5 years to add a ton of spectator information in there. Also, it'll tell you what you can or what you can't bring. It'll tell you where the restricted areas are. It'll also indicate if you're going to need to go through a secure zone and meet that your bags get screened. So it gives you all of those kind of checkpoint map pieces of information. And then, of course, tracking your athletes. This is where everything is. Again, push notifications, turn those on. You can track as many athletes as you'd like to, and it'll give you push notifications when they're hitting those timing mats all throughout their journey. can also send them some cheers for sure. So make sure to download the app. That should have been my answer for all of these things. Download the app. Everything's in there.
I think first time runners who are listening can feel assured that the BAA has this down to a science, like really like from every part of the entire weekend is down to a science. The information is there. You have to find it. You know, it's available. And, you know, if anything runs like clockwork, it really is the Boston Marathon. So I think for anyone who's coming for the first time can rest assured that as long as you find the information and you look it up, it will all go very, very smoothly. So as we, you know, just wrap up and finish up today, as somebody who's run the Boston Marathon, who's somebody who lives on the Boston course and somebody who's intimately involved with putting on this amazing event, what tips do you have for runners who are you know now less than 60 days out? What tips do you have in preparation, and you know what kind of tips for having a successful race experience come Patriots Day?
Trust your training. Practice your hydration, practice your nutrition. So we are Gatorade and Morton's course. So if you are planning on taking hydration and nutrition off the course, start doing it now for sure. I feel like I'm talking to two coaches and I'm giving coaching advice, but that's really the most important. I would suggest that if you are planning on bringing up your own nutrition and hydration, we do allow a 1 gallon bag that we provide that will allow you to bring anything into the village. Now I should go into a little bit detail there. So when you pick up your bib number at the expo, in your bib number will be in a 1 gallon bag that is your start area bag. So if it fits into this bag, you can bring it into the village and then you can carry it on the course with you. So if you're not going to use our hydration or nutrition, make sure you get it in that 1 gallon bag. So that is an important takeaway for sure. So hydration, nutrition, and I would say trust your training, and especially for our first time athletes. And this is something I struggle with. So I feel like I'm giving poor advice. Taper week is the best week ever. Like trust your taper week. We got you. I would say plan your travel in advance. So you're not worried about restaurant reservations, make reservations. If someone tells you, you don't need a reservation in Boston, they are lying. So think about where you want to have your dinner the night before, the dinner after. And I would also suggest if you're coming with friends or families, pick a family reunification spot sooner rather than later. Let's pretend that your cell phone is dead. Make sure your friends and family know what you're wearing that day and have a meetup location following the race so you all can find each other quite simply. And then, of course, we can always make sure you're reunified with your family for sure. But the more information that you can share ahead of time means the less thinking that you have to do event day. So plan like a planner and make sure you get all your details done before the actual day itself.
Those are, like you said, we are coaches and we do tell our runners that, but I think it's probably more meaningful coming from you. So
I need someone to tell me too. I don't take my own advice. We all get
those
nervous.
Those are all... all really, really good. Again, as runners who have done this and as coaches, and those are all like spot on. And those are all things, you know, practice fitting things into your gallon bag and then make sure that whatever you're planning to bring. I still remember the days when we used to bring like chairs, like lawn chairs to used to be able to bring stuff to Hopkinton, and like you bring blankets and chairs and then you check it there and they would bring it back. So, So those that will not fit into your clear gallon bag. Do not
it
try
will
to
not. So Lisa, you brought up a great point, dress in layers in the morning, but dress in layers with things that you do not want to get back. So if you're going up in, you know, 4 or 5 different layers, we have a clothing recycling program. They will go to a fantastic place, but you will not get those clothes back. So don't expect to. So definitely wear something that you're ready to part with for sure. But dress warm. Make sure you can stay dry in any way, shape, or form because it does rain in April. But yeah, as comfortable as you can be. No chairs, Lisa. No chairs up at the village.
No like inflatables or anything like that. One quick question. Otherwise, before we get off to, if somebody is interested or somebody a spectator or a fan, a supporter is interested in volunteering, how do they do that? I think for this year, it may be too late. I think there's an application process. But do you want to talk about that just real quick? Because that's another, as a runner, and I'm sure for you, the volunteers are such an important part. You mentioned the volunteers will take your donations, but there are volunteers, so many volunteers throughout race weekend. How does somebody get involved volunteering? And goes back full circle to what you talked about, is somebody who wants to get into this industry or has, you know, this is their dream job, volunteer. How would they do that?
Sure. So you're spot on. We are filled up for the 5K and the marathon. If you are a local, we would love to have you for the 10K or the half marathon. And we also do some neighborhood events as well. So our website's the best place to start. So BAA.org, go right to the volunteer tab and you can apply to be a volunteer. We have an amazing problem at the BAA where we actually have to turn volunteers away. We have 10,000 volunteers out there day of, 1,500 of them are medical. So those are doctors, EMTs, practitioners that want to give their time to make sure that you are the healthiest you when you finish or on that course, if you need any kind of assistance. But that really is the first and foremost place to get involved is going to BAA.org, go to the volunteer page and apply. We're going to ask you some questions as to, you know, if you've got any talents or expertise, which will help us place you, but we also ask, where do you want to be? So if you would like to work with the para athletes, or if you have an affinity towards baggage claim, which no one ever does, right? But we have lots of different volunteer programs. So we are welcoming of all as much as we can. But we do have to turn some people away because there's just a lot of interest. So we have a fantastic, fantastic group. And we have, every year we have a luncheon and it's for the 30-year volunteers. So we have had several classes of 30-year volunteers. Just it's the most amazing luncheon. Everyone brings their older Boston Marathon jackets when they ran, when they volunteered. And it's like walking through a personal museum. It's the coolest thing. So we've got a lot of people who have just been here for a very long time, and we cherish their time and their expertise and that they come back to us year after year.
Well, we think that the fact that it's very hard to get into the Boston Marathon either as a runner or as a volunteer just speaks again to the reputation of the Boston Marathon. And you talked earlier about balancing that tradition and innovation, but clearly you've done a really great job of it. And I know you have an amazing team, a lot of people behind you, but you know, your leadership certainly has been a big reason that Boston has gone so smoothly. I remember going to the post-marathon press conference in 2022. And it was the perfect year. The weather was like worked out, the buses all worked out. And I remember, I think it was Dave McGillivray at the beginning of the press conference saying, this was, you know, we've had the hot year, the rainy year, the every year. He's like, this was the perfect year. So so we hope that we'll get another year like that. But we know that if it doesn't go perfectly, there's an amazing team there to make sure that everything does go smoothly and the runners and spectators and volunteers have an amazing experience. So thank you so much for joining us. We know you are really busy, especially as race day gets closer, and we are excited to be up there in a couple months and hope that we'll get to see you while we're there, but we know you're going to be very busy. So thank you again for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you for having me. Good to see everyone.
Take care. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryant. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others. And please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening and have a great week.